Kate Supron.
I'm here.
Thank you. Deb Serene.
Here.
Thank you. Wendy Treat.
Present.
Thank you. Jenna Van Houten.
Okay.
I think, yep, okay. And Danielle.
Present.
Thank you. All right, that is it for roll call. Thank you so much, everyone.
Yvonne, I think
Yes.
we have an updated Rose on the roll call list.
An updated what? I'm sorry.
Rose Howard, the Employee Assembly
That's right.
voted Rose in last meeting, and I
Thank
think we did
you.
not update the roll call list. Sorry about that.
Thank you so much. Is Rose here with us today?
I am here.
Awesome. Thank you, Rose. All right. That is it. Send it back to you, Erica.
Thank you. And now we will move on to our land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayakono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayakono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with a historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Gayakono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of Gayakono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. And now we will move forward
Question.
to. What was that?
Sorry, I was testing my microphone. Apologies.
No problem. So we'll move forward to the November 6th approval of the minutes. So take some time to review that, and then I will open the floor for motions to approve the November 6th minutes.
Pardon the interruption, Erica. I think Wendy has her hand up.
My apologies, Wendy. Yes.
There are a couple of typos and amendment that needs to be made under the adjournment. So the typos are Mel Banta. Her name is misspelled under members present. It just says Mel Banta. Under business of the day, investment is misspelled, investment officer. And then the first pre-submitted questions, tax implications, is misspelled. And at the very bottom, under adjournment, item A, I motioned to adjourn, not to extend. So I would like to make those amendments and put a motion to approve by unanimous consent.
All right, there was another name that needs to be updated as well. Ellie Crum. It's Ellie Crum Powers. But other than that, I don't see any other.
Okay. I'm just going to call on a couple more people just in case. Dave?
Yeah, I was wondering, under the pre-submitted questions about the divestment, it said that his office can't really respond to how the team reacts. And I don't think that's really what he said. I think he said a couple of things. He said that they can do it, but they have to be directed to do it. That was my what I heard. And then he really said that, you know, their goal is to manage the money to get the best results possible. Balancing risk with return. But again, that they could do something if they were directed to do so, but they had to have that direction. So I think that's a better way to put what you said than what's there right now. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave. And Rose?
I just saw we were doing misspelling, so I think unanimous is misspelled every time it shows up. Sorry for calling you out. Just telling you. Thank you.
No, you're fine. Thank you. Awesome. And so, is there a motion on the floor? I know, Wendy, I can't remember what yours was. So if you would like to restate it.
I motioned to approve those amendments that I stated. I would like to retract that and motion to approve the other amendments as well. And then motion to approve by unanimous consent.
Is there a second?
And I offer a different motion to make the corrections and present the corrections at our next meeting. Would that be out of the question? Obviously, happy to motion for that.
Is there a second for Carl's motion?
I have to withdraw my motion first, so I withdraw my motion.
Thank you, Wendy.
You're welcome.
Is there a second for Carl's motion on the floor?
I'll Rose? Yep.
Oh, thank you, Rose. It's been properly moved and seconded that the minutes for November 6th will be updated and then brought back to our next meeting for approval. Awesome. That was by unanimous consent, right? I'm not crazy. Okay. Sorry. All right, so moving on to calls for late additions to the agenda. Are there any late additions to the agenda? No? Seeing no hands here, we will move on to our business of the day, which would be the Cornell Committee on Expressive Activity. So I will turn this over to Colleen Berry.
Thank you, Erica. I appreciate it. And thanks to all of the members of the EA for inviting us to come and speak with you today. I want to just very briefly acknowledge the other members of our Cornell Expressive Activity Committee that are with us. So I saw Carl was here, Marcy was here, and Adi. Did I miss anyone? Great. So what I'd like to try to do to preserve as much time for conversation and additional feedback as possible is to briefly summarize the work that our committee has done. And so I'm going to try to do this in 10 minutes or so. So today, I'm going to briefly summarize the draft expressive activity policy that we've put together, as well as briefly summarize other recommendations in the committee report. Next slide, please, Lisa. So just as a quick reminder or to share with those that aren't familiar with the process that we've been through, our Committee on Expressive Activity was formed the spring semester with a charge from Martha Pollack. There are 19 staff, students, and faculty representing the three campuses on this committee. We met biweekly over the summer, and we've met weekly since the academic year began. We've held 28 campus listening sessions plus some additional topical meetings. We've reviewed an extensive amount of written feedback, both feedback to the initial interim expressive activity policy, and then since our committee was formed, feedback directly to our committee. We identified 16 peer universities and have looked at their expressive activity policies to try to glean insights that could be important for Cornell. On October 30th, we released the draft policy and the draft report to the full Cornell community for what we're thinking about as an open comment period. We are in the process and actually wrapping up a series of 8 different meetings with Cornell shared governance bodies on the Ithaca campus, as well as the Weill Cornell Medicine campus that were held between November 11th and 20th. Plus, we've scheduled a community-wide listening session for December 3rd. Our goal is to, on the basis of the feedback that we've collected during this period of consultation, provide a revised policy and a revised report to university leadership. And our policy, like all policies, must eventually be approved by the Cornell Executive Policy Review Group. Next slide, please. So our committee has developed a framework for thinking about our charge. And that framework has 3 components to it. The first, that open inquiry and freedom of expression are among Cornell's core values and, in our committee's view, vital for any institution of higher learning. Number 2, that Cornell also has a fundamental responsibility to ensure the safety of all community members and to protect the ability of us all to do what we are here to do, that is our students' ability to learn, our faculty to teach and conduct research, healthcare providers to treat patients, and staff members to deliver critical services. The last point, and I'll spend a moment on this, is in our committee's view, many of the provisions that are currently housed in Cornell's interim expressive activity policy are not special to expressive activity, but pertain to many different types of activities on campus. So some of the recommendations that we have made for revisions or changes to the interim expressive policy reflect that framework. So for example, in the original interim expressive activity policy, there are some provisions that speak, for example, to open flame, yet the Cornell university campus has a fire code. And so in our view, there's not a need to speak to this in the expressive activity policy to the extent that it's covered under the fire code policy. So our committee's proposed a new policy based on this framework. Next slide, please. From this framework, we developed 6 draft principles that connect expressive activity to our learning mission. But the first 3 I've already alluded to. The first, the value around open inquiry and free expression as part of our core values. Second, the notion that free expression is not limitless and may come into tension with other Cornell core values, including our membership in a shared community, and that expression can't prevent other community members from participating in the community. 3, this point that I made a moment ago related to approaches related to expressive activity, mirroring approaches to other types of activities. 4, that in a few settings, expressive activity in the view of our committee should be prohibited or limited. 5, that input from the broader community can help support university leaders in balancing free expression with other values. And 6, that neutrality and content and viewpoint of expression is essential for implementing time, place, and manner regulations. Next slide. So I'm going to just very briefly mention the components of our draft policy. I list them here in a quick 10-minute presentation. I'm not going to take the time to go through each, but I'm happy to talk about each, both in terms of how we are proposing to handle different aspects of the draft policy and the underlying rationale for those decisions. Next slide, please. These are the special settings on campuses where we talked about special considerations when it comes to expressive activity. And again, the specific considerations are detailed in the report itself. Next slide, please. The draft report also fulfills one component of the charge that was originally given to our committee by Martha Pollack, and that is to make recommendations for progressive measures for time, place, and manner violations. So we, for example, articulate in the report that time, place, and manner rules should be construed as narrowly as possible, that measures should follow the disciplinary structures already in place for students, for staff, and for faculty, that a warning phase can be helpful to make sure someone is on notice if there is a rule violation related to time, place, and manner. That we recommend dividing violations into different tiers for disciplinary purposes and clearly communicating the lines between and the consequences of those differences. So peaceful assembly being different from civil disobedience, and that from disruption, property damage, threats, violence, and property destruction. Next slide, please. We also made a series of recommendations for progressive measures related to the code of conduct as it pertains to students. And similarly, we recommended that the university and collective bargaining units consider adopting analogous principles for staff and faculty and for the relevant code of conduct for students in the Weill Cornell Medicine campus. On our Ithaca campus, we made two specific recommendations related to the student code of conduct. First, we are recommending some clarifications under narrow use of the temporary suspension of students under that student code of conduct policy. And second, our committee was concerned about the normal student disciplinary conduct process being in some circumstances quite long, going on for, 4 to 6 months, and that being an opportunity to create a more efficient process that would allow disciplinary proceedings to be resolved in as efficient and timely a way as possible. Finally, I note on this slide that in our review of other peer policies, there were a broader or a different set of progressive measures to conduct violations or time, place, and manner rule violations that might be worth considering at Cornell. Things that came up in other peer policies like dean's warning or community service, censure and the like. There are a bunch of these that are listed in our report, and we thought that they might be considered by Cornell to sort of add some additional options in thinking about time, place, and manner violations related to expressive activity on the Cornell campus. Next slide. Finally, we had a series of recommendations around implementation and then some sort of follow-on suggestions. Related to implementation, we noted that a number of our peers have very helpful websites, specifically UVA, Stanford, and Princeton, that pull together all of the relevant information related to, say, if someone wants to engage in expressive activity, some resources to do that, and also information in a central place related to the rules related to campus policy on expressive activity. So we thought it would be useful for Cornell to consider a similar approach. Second, we thought a standing committee that includes members of the Cornell community might provide additional support to university leadership in considering complicated cases around free expression in the context of time, place, and manner. Last, because our recommendations touch a variety of different aspects of campus life, we suggested a small implementation working group to support university leadership in adopting the recommendations that our committee has put forward and offered. Finally, there are a set of areas where, based on our listening sessions, we thought that it might be useful for the university to consider additional areas that are not, again, specifically related to our committee's charge, but pertain to creating an environment on our campus that supports expressive activity as part of a learning community. So first, our committee recommended that the university take a close look at indoor and outdoor scheduling systems and trainings for staff who are tasked with managing scheduling, including scheduling related to expressive activity. Second, we got a lot of questions and noted quite a bit of confusion in our listening sessions related to social media and other online activities. While this is outside the charge of our committee, we recommend that the university develop some guidance and protections related to limits on private social media and other online activity to provide more guidance to the community. Third, and again, this is an outgrowth of our listening sessions, we recommend additional clarity for staff to help understand both rights and responsibilities related to how professional conduct expectations map onto their activities around expressive activity, both inside and outside work settings. We had some recommendations related to public safety. And while the committee is not charged with weighing in on whether Cornell should adopt a formal policy of institutional neutrality, or what is sometimes referred to as institutional restraint, we thought it would be sensible for the university to consider assembling a group to provide background analysis and potential recommendations, as some of our other peer institutions have done. Finally, it's not within the committee charge to develop policy or rules around hate speech or offensive speech, but we did note, again, in our listening sessions, quite a bit of variation in orientation among community members to how the university should respond to speech that is offensive. And we thought that some additional community-wide conversation could help think through what our approach should be on these often challenging matters. I think that's the end of my presentation, and we can maybe pull the slides down. Thank you. So I think at this stage, and Erica, I defer to you, we are very much in the phase where we're trying to collect as much feedback as possible to make revisions to our policy and our report, and are looking for wisdom and input from this group that could be in the form of discussion right now. We also have a feedback survey where we would welcome feedback. That feedback also can be provided in an anonymous form. So thank you.
Absolutely. So at this point in time, we are going to take questions or comments for the Cornell Committee on Expressive Activity. So if you do have any comments, questions, concerns, please raise your hand. Those of you who are EA representatives, you will have, we will defer to you first and make sure that your concerns are heard on behalf of your constituencies. So we'll start with Danielle.
I just wanted to speak on behalf of what I was present for the Faculty Senate meeting. Colleen did in another amazing presentation there. But the feeling from the faculty seemed to be they appreciated the reining in of the suspensions, which they've been very concerned about. But there was kind of a general mistrust of anything that was developed under the umbrella of President Pollack. They felt like anything might be biased, and recommended that there be a democratically elected committee to move forward with this. I don't know what was decided beyond that, but just as kind of some perspective from what their point of view was.
Thank you, Danielle.
Yvonne?
Yes, thank you so much for, you know, like presenting this information and the draft policy. And I personally really appreciate the changes that have already that I've already seen within this policy. And one of my questions really relates to the spontaneous protests. I think it's on page 18. So initially, day hold had been listed on there with a limitation of 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. As far as time goes. Can I ask, why was it removed? What was the rationale?
So I think that we are still recommending that Cornell identify sites for spontaneous protest, both on the Ithaca campus as well as on our other campuses as well. The Ho Plaza and day hall site. Oh, I see your question. Your question is that we removed day hall in addition to Ho Plaza.
Correct.
So thank you. That's a great point. And one thing that we've heard pretty consistently from these listening sessions is additional sites would be useful and beneficial for spontaneous protest. And it sounds like I'm reading in a little to your question, and maybe I'll ask you to follow up, but that Day Hall is another important site. Is that fair, Yvonne?
Yes, I mean, it was initially listed, right? So that's what brought up this question. And in addition to that, I mean, it holds different senior administrators' offices, which could, you know, like at certain times when protests or other types of expressive activities are happening, where senior administration may be taking particular standpoints, drafting different policies or what have you, there might be dissent from the community, whether it's faculty, staff, or students. And I think it's fair to say that if someone is protesting to be heard and acknowledge that they're dissenting to whatever decision was made or action, that Day Hall would be the place to be, again, given the fact that senior administrators have offices within that space.
Yeah, so that is an excellent point, and I really appreciate you pulling it out. And just by way of just a quick bit of background, I think our intent was not to narrow available sites for spontaneous protests, but given some of the challenges and expectations around advanced scheduling, we wanted to sort of highlight the importance of allowing for spontaneous protest and create settings on campus that allowed for differential use of amplified sound, maybe even beyond the parameters that were identified in the interim policy. So that's a really helpful piece of feedback that we shouldn't unintentionally sort of narrow that scope. Thank you. And my other committee members, the other committee members should jump in too if they want to add to or disagree in friendly ways from what I'm saying. Marcy.
Great point. But yeah, we were also looking at the congestion that Day Hall was posing with all of the protests and especially with the union activity. Just seeing how congested it could get. So to look at additional places in addition to Day Hall, Ho Plaza's a central location. It's not too far from administrative offices, I believe. So yeah, just looking at other places, and we're still actively looking at how to improve scheduling and things like that. But yeah, thanks.
The concern about Day Plaza was with a very large protest, it could roll into the street and have some sort of safety issues. But that maybe isn't a reason not to allow for a Day Hall protest, given the reasons that you've noted related to university leadership.
Rose?
Thanks. I just had a question. I everything you guys have done is great. So like, awesome, great work, guys. But quick question. When I look at page 10 and I look at the range of violations, so you had the helpful infographic, but I was reading the definitions and I was curious how how we determined between peaceful assembly to disruption, because civil disobedience, like some people might define civil disobedience as peaceful and some people might define it as a disruption. And I was wondering what are the guidelines to help the administration actually choose that? Because I think most people engaging in civil disobedience want it to be disruptive in order to get their point across.
no question. So those are two different and important questions. The first one, I think we were distinguishing between peaceful assembly, which is by definition not violating time, place, and manner rules, to civil disobedience, which is by definition violating time, place, and manner rules. And that being different from disruption, to the extent that civil disobedience is typically less disruptive, and that we think about each of those forms of expressive activity somewhat differently, in part because in some cases time, place, and manner rules are being violated. And in the first case, they wouldn't be. So that's the context. Your second part of your comment relates to how the university leadership thinks about those different kinds of expressive activity, either similarly or differently. And we are suggesting that some different considerations be given to each. And again, this is an area where feedback and thoughts would be very welcome. But, you know, I completely agree with you that in certain circumstances, disruption is connected to expressive activity.
Anne?
Thank you. I really appreciate all of the work and the presentation here. It's really helpful. I was particularly interested in the additional recommendations that you offered on your slides and then in page 15, I think it is, of the report. And the social media and other online activity and the human resources clarity for staff are especially topics I think that are of interest to me as part of the employee assembly. I know that it's not within your committee's purview, but I'm wondering, has there been any uptake on that? What are possible future actions and any kind of timeline for when those kinds of clarity for staff can be provided? Thank you.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the answer is no, to the extent that these are just the sort of draft recommendations of a group of 19 community members. I think because these themes came up regularly, while not sort of exactly pertaining to our scope, our committee did see value in suggesting that the university take a closer look. And it falls, I think, to the appropriate units of the university to sort of think about how best to take up our recommendations. We also want to say that with a 19-member committee, we don't have expertise across every sort of aspect of university life, but mostly we're trying to listen and make recommendations to the extent that we heard important things coming out of our listening sessions. That said, I think part of the recommendation around this implementation working group is to create some continuity to say, okay, 6 months from now, what's happened here concretely along the range of recommendations that we've made, and to provide some kind of continuity and support to aid those different areas where recommendations are being made to sort of understand what the rationale was from our committee for making the recommendation, and to just try to create some momentum to make sure these different suggestions are taken up.
Yeah.
Hey. So this might be a silly question, but I'm gonna ask anyways. In section 5.1, what does it mean when it says members of protected groups?
Yeah, so the member, so first of all, I'll say, I don't know whether we have any on the Zoom right now, but our committee had 3 constitutional lawyers on it. And so those of us that are not lawyers learned quite a bit from our lawyers. And so the protected groups are under the Civil Rights Act, like it's sort of a legality issue. I think so harassment of protected groups is literally illegal. And so that's sort of part of the context of calling that out. What our committee would say on top of that is there's both sort of legal requirements, but also how we want to engage respectfully in a community where we all share membership. So our committee sort of went above and beyond the legal requirement to say that we have an obligation to each other to not engage in activities that deny some members of our community from sort of full involvement as Cornellians, and that constitute things like harassment or intimidation, like that those kinds of activities are not okay in a community like ours that's dedicated to supporting all of us and supporting belonging.
Okay.
So
I don't know.
legal issue just
Yeah, it's legal language,
makes
and
it
we can
sound
think about
like
changing it potentially.
you're by saying that it sounds like, yeah, but it's okay to harass anybody
Yeah,
else.
exactly. That's a
Right.
totally great point, and a reason why we could think about changing that language and making it less legalese and more focused on sort of what our shared values are. So as I'm hearing all of these comments, please know that I'm like actively typing, and so are our other committee members. So we'll take that up with the committee. It's a great point, to flag.
Yeah.
I do have a question for you in these last few minutes we have here. With the group that you wanted to have for like high level cases, was the idea for the people to staff this group folks who are experienced with student conduct because it is a field of practice, right? And so the folks making the recommendations should have a understanding of student conduct practices. So what was the thought behind who would be part of this group who would then help, I guess, advise the conduct team on how to move forward with these high level expressive activity cases?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And I think our intention was exactly as you say, that this would be a small group with some specialized expertise in the area of expressive activity that would provide some additional support to the office in thinking about all of the sort of nuanced issues involved in adjudicating these cases. That was our hope and intent.
Thank you for that. Pia, is this a new question? No. Do any other EA members have any questions before? Seeing none. Okay, Allison, go for it. That'll be our
Thank
last
you.
question.
Great. Thank you. I'm trying to understand the parts that are going to be left to units to figure out, or that you're recommending that for as far as staff is concerned. Is it just about discipline, or is it about the actual rules? Like, does this policy, is that, is, or is that too big of a, I don't know.
It's
Is
a
it
great
the rules
question.
or is it the discipline? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a little complicated, I'll say. So our expectation is that the entire Cornell community would have a shared set of expectations around free expression on campus, and when free expression ended up constituting time, place, and manner violations. So everyone would be thought of in a similar way in terms of those expectations. But then from a disciplinary standpoint, we are recommending that the policy be considered in the context of existing structures for discipline. And so what that means is student disciplinary conduct considerations look different from staff, and those look different from faculty. So for example, the sort of HR administrative structure for thinking about disciplinary issues when it comes to staff would be the structure that would be used in the context of expressive activity violations, just as it would be used in the same way that it is for any other disciplinary matter related to a staff member. The nuance at a place like Cornell is these structures differ for student, staff, and faculty. Does that answer the question, Allison? I'm sorry, maybe it
Yes,
wasn't.
that clicked for me. I appreciate it.
Great. Okay, thank you.
And Colleen, do you have a few more minutes? I see Tom has his hand up.
Absolutely.
Tom.
Thank you. This is a quick question. In reading this, I noticed that you differentiate between people who are Cornelians and people who are obviously outside and those kinds of things. But I didn't, and perhaps I didn't catch it, but where do retirees fall in this?
Yeah, so retirees have come up in question and answer. Alumni have come up in question and answer. So there is definitely some nuance here, I'll say. The formal definition that we've used in our draft report is a university ID. That is, we have an open campus where people move around our outdoor spaces and indoor spaces during open hours, if there are public indoor spaces. And that could be people with an ID or without an ID, but there are certain sort of rights and responsibilities that we as individuals who are student, staff, and faculty with working IDs have that are somewhat different from people without IDs. And I will admit to you, Tom, I do not know the nuance. I should, but I don't, for sort of what the retiree status looks like in that context. So that's actually, that's a great example of our committee has learned an enormous amount, but we haven't learned everything in terms of the implications. So if you have insights there or you're worried about some aspect of the way we've written that, please share your thoughts with us through our survey or through some other means, because we're
Just
trying to get it right in every way that we can.
a quick follow-up to that.
Yeah, please.
Is there any plan or is there a way to get it? Have you sought feedback from retirees who are, is there a way for them to look at the policy and give you any feedback on that? Maybe through either the newsletter or otherwise?
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. We have shared our committee report with all staff, students, and faculty on the Ithaca, Weill Cornell Medicine, and Cornell Tech campus. There have been some additional requests to forward the report to other groups or to link it in other ways. And in all of those cases, we've enthusiastically been supportive of that. So if there are retiree connections that we can make through you or some other suggestion, we'd be happy to pursue that. So maybe we can talk offline. Marcy is putting her hand up here, so she might have some additional thoughts.
So sorry. Yes,
Right.
if okay to respond. I just wanted, you didn't mention Geneva, and I do see our Geneva rep here, so I just want to make sure we included Geneva. I
Yeah,
think we did,
we
but
did. We did include Geneva. Good
okay.
catch.
Okay.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Colleen, and the rest of the Cornell Committee on Expressive Activity. We appreciate you all for coming in and speaking with us today, providing some clarity. And if folks still want to provide feedback and/or questions, please remember to provide that feedback in the feedback link. We've sent that out via email, but it's also posted in the chat for folks. And obviously, if you need it, we can also send it to you directly. So just reach out to us and we can do that for you.
One final word, Erica, before we sign off, I just want to say how thankful I am to everyone for reading the report. I'm so impressed by like section 5, page 11. Like it's clear to me that folks took the time to read what is quite a long report. So thank you for that. That means a lot to those of us that have spent the last few months of our lives trying to do good work here. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a good day. All right. Awesome sauce, people. Now we will move on to our next portion of our meeting, which is voting on our vice chair of communications. We sent the description of what that position entails. Are there any folks who would be interested in assuming this role in Don's absence? Oh, don't all jump at once.
Wait, Erica, could you remind us what a short version of what it means to take on that role?
Sure. So as the vice chair of communications, you would meet, of course, with the lovely executive committee the Fridays prior to our
EA meetings. You would also be in charge of sending out our EA Voice, which is our newsletter that we do monthly. And then there would be some monthly meetings with the team, with your communications team, to talk about what to highlight in that newsletter, and then help to advertise the information for the awards we oversee, which is the George Peter Award and the it used to be a Mary Opperman Award, but it's something else now. I can't remember the whole name for it. It's like the
Staff Award for Inclusion and Integrity.
Thank you, Staff Award for Inclusion and Integrity. And so that is pretty much a synopsis of it. If you haven't been added to our box folder yet, Rose, I can make sure that gets done, and then we can send you that full description if you would like to see that.
I have it. I just like hearing it out loud.
Anybody? No takers? Okay. No worries. We will march forward. So before we move to our committee reports, Wendy. Yeah.
I really don't want to march forward to committee report. It is really vital that we have someone in this role. I know everyone is sitting there like, oh, do I have the time? Can I commit to it? We really need to have someone in this position, because if not, it puts more work on the committee members. It puts more work on the executive committee. We need to get the word out about who the employee assembly is and what we do. And that's the point of our newsletter. That's the point of these coffee with coworkers. It's outreach, it's communication. I respectfully ask that we try and get someone in this role today, because this isn't a role that we can leave vacant. Yes, one of our seats we can leave vacant because we have an election every year and we have incidental vacancies that we can fill roles this way. This is one of our executive committee positions that we need to get filled. So I would respectfully ask that we do try to get someone in today, if possible. If not, then by next meeting, because again, we really need to have someone in this position. And on the plus side to your committee members, last year's chair, Sophie Lanchez, is one of your committee members. I'm on the committee. Carl's on the committee. I believe Pia is on the committee. And I'm not sure who our fifth EA voting member is on. I think Sean, maybe. So you've got some experience that can help with things. But again, we really need a person in this position.
Can I ask a question? I'm on meeting two, so this is all really new to me, but how do we normally fill these positions? Is it like people just step forward, or do people get nominated? Like,
Go ahead, Wendy.
Typically in the spring, after we've elected all of our new members, we have what's called an organizational meeting. And then that organizational meeting, we then take nominations for all of the executive committee positions, starting with chair, then executive vice chair, my role, which is vice chair for operations and finance, the vice chair for communications and parliamentarian, which Carl is in that role right now. Then after we get all that settled, then we also approve during that meeting the meeting schedule for the upcoming term. So this was all taken, you know, Don was nominated and took on that role last May, so like 6 months ago. He has since found that, you know, he is not able to fulfill the role due to different things. But yeah, this is, like I said, it's something that we really shouldn't leave it sitting empty.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Wendy, for letting us know how vital this position is to the functionality of EA. If there are no takers right now, we will try to hold another call for volunteers at our next meeting to hopefully give folks some time to kind of think about if they're able to do this in the spring, right? Because essentially that's how long you would have the position for, from January to May, and then allow people to kind of simmer on that. Carl?
We will also accept nominations for other people to be in this role too. So if you do think that there is someone who would fit this role, we would accept nominations. It's up to the nominee to decide whether they accept or deny that nomination. But I just wanted to put that into effect as well.
Thank you, Carl. So we will put this on the agenda for next meeting, so we can have a more fruitful discussion, hopefully. Allison, I do think you have to be an EA member to hold that position, yes. So before we get on to committee reports, we received a lovely email. For those of you who have been in EA for a little while longer, you may know Craig Wiggers, who used to be the former chair. Craig's family is close with the Abed family, and so he has chosen to take in the children of the Abed family in light of everything that has happened. If you are unaware of what has happened, there was a Cornell staff member who is being accused of murdering his wife, and so they have children, and those children are being taken in by Craig. And so we wanted to see if EA members wanted to do anything in support of Craig, as he's a great community leader. He has been a leader for this space, wanting to see how we would like, if at all, to assist him in this undertaking. Danielle?
Craig was my manager. He reached out to me directly last week, and I reached out to him again earlier this week. He did say that the community support is actually getting a little overwhelming right now in terms of visits for the kids and such. He also said that the local Iraqi families have been amazing in support, and the local teachers, and that they are stocked up on food for a while. I was just going to drop off treats because I know what he likes to eat, but even that, he said they need some decompress time. As some background, the accused was the translator for Craig's unit in Iraq, and Craig worked with the government to bring him and his family over. He's very, very close with the family. So this was a personal tragedy in addition to taking on four kids age 11 to 18 now. Craig's an empty nester. He's probably the most amazing person I know. So if you guys have ideas on how to support him, that's great. In terms of the standard drop off food, go visit, they are very covered for that now. So any out of the box ideas, we would love to hear. We've been thinking here in physics also on this. And anything you have ideas on, if you want to bounce off me, I'm happy to help too.
Thank you, Danielle. Christy?
Hi, thank you, Eric and Danielle. I've been thinking about the medium and long term. I mean, always in the moment, people are there. But these children are in this community. They've been in the high schools. They're in the middle schools. They, if they choose to remain here, will be in this community in the long haul. And I just wonder how we can, what we can do to support these children going forward, beyond the food that's in the refrigerator for the next week and month, you know. I think of, I don't know, I don't have answers, but I think of just what a terrible loss this is for those children, and what a tragic life event to navigate in this very small community for the rest of their childhood.
I want to add in, the kids are all legal citizens, and Craig and his wife have applied to be their permanent fosters. The oldest is 18, but still in high school, so still a dependent.
I wonder about anything the EA has ever done in the past, and I don't know, is Jessica on? Is there any kind of precedent? I mean, is it something that where we could do a campaign for a scholarship, or what EA activities has occurred where we may be able to rally our community? I don't know.
Yes, Jeff. We can look into it. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, Christy. I can look back. I think we have to be very careful. And I totally agree that that Craig is amazing, and his capacity to be able to take this on is a testimony to who he is as a person, him and his wife, Betsy. But the employee assembly has to be careful that they're, you know, you can only use your budget for employee assembly things, for administrative purposes. So we'd have to look and just be very careful how we do something, but I can do some research. It will not be today and it may not be tomorrow, but I can do some to help you.
Thank you. Jamie?
Yes, thank you, Erica. I just wanted to say that, you know, we also should be mindful that with Craig being such a well respected and well known member of the Cornell and the Ithaca community, I know here at Cornell there are other units, departments that are also pulling resources together to try to do things for Craig and his family. My supervisor talked to me about it this morning, and you know, there's plans for our team to try to put together some contributions. So I think we also need to be mindful of that when we're thinking about like what EA wants to do, so that we're not duplicating too many efforts, if that makes sense.
Thank you, Jamie. Adam put in the chat, maybe use the support currently to set up a scholarship, not via Cornell if not allowed, but redirect any community support to a scholarship fund. Well, that could be helpful. So if folks come out to us, then we know where to direct them to aid that support effort for Craig. Okay. So maybe we sit on this and then revisit how we can help. Carl?
I have one parliamentarian thing. For new topics, we do need to keep them to open discussion or add them to the agenda just to stay on track. I'm happy to continue this discussion in an open discussion, but we really should stay on track with the agenda. I'm really sorry. I know this is a hard topic to do that with, but.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate it. So we will move on to committee reports. Executive Committee, Yvonne.
Hello, everyone. I wanted to remind everyone that we have our next EA-sponsored coworker coffee December 5th from 9:30 to 11:30 in Duffield Hall. Please come hang out with the EA members, get to know them a little bit more. Well, you all, right? And we will be sent. Actually, I think Erica had sent already a email with the flyers that you can distribute with your constituents and I guess the offices that you work in. If you want, we want to encourage you to attend and to invite others to come learn a little bit more about the EA.
Just as a quick note, and in addition to that, you have to download the flyers and send them out to the folks. Mm. They aren't going to be able to access the box link because they're not an EA member. Awesome. Our next committee, well, we will skip communications, outreach, and recognition in lieu of Don's absence. Employee Education and Development Committee, Deb.
Hi, Deb had to leave early, so she asked me to share some information as an education committee member. She wanted me to let you all know that we're continuing to review our goals and determine focus for the coming year. We're working to fill some of the ex officio seats on the committee, and our next meeting is the week of December 9th. In addition, thank you to Jessica, who sent us some very helpful information about where to find more answers to our question about the tax implications of certain employee education benefits. So we'll be following up on that. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Anne. So our next committee, the Employee Welfare Committee, Christy.
Hello. I echo what Anne has just said. The committee has closed the semester with focusing on what we wish to pursue as our priorities for next term. Our first meeting is December, whatever the Wednesday is for, I think. And we will be identifying key priorities for the spring term at that time.
Thank you, Christy. Benefits and Policy Committee, Bethany.
Hi, everyone. I do not have any new updates. I wasn't at our last meeting, so I don't know if there were a lot of updates, but our next meeting is the week of December 5th. And please feel free to join us if you are curious. I can always forward the meeting invitation. Thank you.
All right. And is anyone, well, the election committee has not met yet. So I don't think we have an update from elections because Stephanie isn't here. Wendy?
I can actually speak on behalf of that. So we were supposed to meet Monday, and Stephanie had an emergency, so we were not able to meet. She did send us a draft of the calendar and a draft of the election rules. And she's going to be working with Jessica to finalize the calendar because, as we know, the Office of the Assembly provides a huge amount of support to us during election season. And we need to make sure, like, our calendar doesn't conflict with the student assembly election calendar, which they also support. And then just with the vacant, we do have vacant seats right now that have been sitting vacant for quite a while. It is College of Arts and Sciences, the Graduate School and Law School, ILR, Health and Safety, Public Policy, and now with Don stepping down, the College of Veterinary Medicine. So those seats have been sitting vacant. And then we also have obviously the seats that are currently filled with people on this call, that their terms come up in 2025.
Thank you, Wendy.
You're welcome.
All right. So moving on to resources, we provided four resources for folks in light of everything that has been happening on campus, with our students that we support, with one another. So reminding folks to make sure that you take care of yourself, and here are some resources that you can use in order to do that. We can't show up for ourselves or our students or our colleagues if we're not taking care of ourselves first, right? So make sure to utilize any of these resources if you need them. And then for open discussion, would anybody like to return to the topic of supporting Craig during this time? I know Brian put something in the chat to like reiterate the idea of the scholarship fund, as there's an 18-year-old who's likely lost an incredible college tuition benefit, and it could be an incredible way for us to support Craig and his family. Thinking about that. Okay, we have about 9 minutes left. Does anybody else have anything that they would like to discuss? Carl?
I do want to reiterate that the communications seat is really important for us to fill. I think one of the great ways to do that is by nominating someone. If you want to share a nomination preemptively before next meeting, you could email the nomination to the EA Executive Committee or any member on the Executive Committee. We could compile those and relay those nominations at the next meeting, or you could just nominate at the next meeting yourself. That'd be really great.
Thank you, Carl. Danielle?
I'm curious with whoever we have on from HR, if back to the Craig situation, if this person's parent had been a Cornell employee and then Craig becomes the legal foster, are they still entitled to the Cornell education benefits? Being the 50% off Cornell tuition or 25% other accredited institutions. Would that carry to a foster child? And if we don't know, can we recommend who I could reach out to find out?
That's an awesome question. We may be able to bring that up in our meeting, Yvonne, tomorrow, and see if we can get some information from VP Lovely on that. All right. In this last 7 minutes here, anybody have anything that they would like to discuss? Oh, is Kyle on the call? I wanted to give an update. Well, I'll just give that update now. I don't think Kyle's on the call, but we were able to discuss the Governor Hochul's decision on menstrual products being provided at public institutions. And so the University Assembly is going to look at that. We have to have a more robust discussion around that. It was tabled, but definitely interested in talking about how we can support that effort if it's feasible for us. Anne? You're on mute, Anne.
Thanks. I was just going to share that the eligibility guidelines for the Children's Scholarship say they have to be a foster child for 5 years. So I'll drop the link in chat.
Yeah, but somebody, Adam, already dropped some information there. I'm just curious with kind of odd extenuating circumstances of being eligible as a child immediately within 3 hours of the event becoming the
Yeah.
dependent of another staff member, if there's any way to wedge that in.
Great.
One last call for things. Anybody else have anything else they want to discuss?
Michael Boggs here. I just wanted to and Erica, help me out if I'm missing anybody, but a shout out to Carl for winning an award yesterday at the Employee Excellence.
Yes, shout out to Carl for winning. Shout out, Michael, I do believe you were nominated. Bethany, I do believe you were nominated. Awesome, great news for folks.
And shout out
And
to Erica's team for winning the Trustee Award.
there you go. Perfect.
thank you.
Yeah.
And Ricky, can I share your news or no?
Yeah, that's fine.
Awesome. Ricky got engaged. So congrats to Ricky.
Thank you, everyone. I appreciate it.
If I could hop in quick with just a liaison report.
Absolutely.
Already discussed, we did the expressive policy. Colleen did her presentation. The other topics were visibility of chair's letters for tenure for faculty, and there was still a lot of time and energy spent on condemning Joel Molina's discussion with the parents. I don't know what the vote ended up on that, but along with that, there was also talk about President Kotlikoff's comments about a course that's been created about displaced Indigenous populations. He spoke unfavorably about that, and that caught the attention of people who took it upon themselves to then start sending death threats to the faculty member and family. So there is also a lot of frustration from within the faculty senate about President Kotlikoff taking a position that it is not within his purview to take.
Thank you for sharing, Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In the interest of time, are there any other liaison reports? No? Awesome. Okay. So I will welcome a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn, but first I just want to do a point of information for Rose. Putting stuff in our chat is definitely all fine and good, but also it needs to be, you need to state it, because we have virtual meetings. Whatever is in the chat is not part of our minute and part of the public record. So again, the minutes also are just actions that are taken by the assembly, not everything that's said verbatim, but it's just helpful because the information that is posted in chat is not included in our minutes.
Thank you. Then can I briefly bring that up then? Or just
we haven't adjourned yet.
Okay. Then I'll just briefly say I do know someone who knew the family we were just talking about. And they did forward me that some people are sending donations to a religious center that family does go to. So I just dropped that in the chat because I just got that information. So I was poking about that. And thank you, Wendy, for letting me know about the policy. And I will revisit the policy list as well. Thank you.
I pass by there every day on my way home from work also. So if there's anything that's ever collected EA-wise or just community-wise that needs an easy drop-off person, I'm happy to do that.
Thank you. Wendy, can you restate your motion so we can get a second?
I would like to motion to adjourn.
Awesome. Do we have a second?
Second.
By unanimous consent, we are adjourned at 1:14 p.m. Have a great rest of your day, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.